This is Friday on the Other Side on Mind Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Fridays, we take a look at experiences and concepts that you might not think have a mental health component, but in fact, they do. I'm very pleased to introduce to you today's guest, Nanette Hucknall is a psychotherapist, a career therapist, a writer, an artist. Hold on to your hat. She's more. She's a co-founder of the Center for Peace Through Culture. She is the founder and president of Higher Self Yoga. Nanette, according to your bio, you're about 412 years old.
I don't feel that way. Thank you.
It's a good thing, but you certainly have been very busy doing many things in your life.
That's true. That's true. And I've enjoyed that. I've had a very full life. And I want to thank you, by the way, Dr. Brewer, for having me on your show. I think it's a really interesting show. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I always love to hear positive feedback. What occasions our conversation today is actually a book that you have written, and it's not your first, I don't believe, but it is entitled How to Live from Your Heart, Deepen Relationships, Develop Creativity, and Discover Inner Wisdom. In a lot of ways, it kind of sounds like everybody's goal, but so much of what many people don't think they can ever achieve. How to live from your heart. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's actually, one of the things I've discovered that is very interesting is in the West, we don't really use our hearts very much. We're very mind-oriented. And one of the things that really bothers me is what's happening in the schools. In all the schools, everything is tests. Studying for tests, doing exams all the time, teachers teaching how to do tests. There is no creativity. There's no using the heart, which is where the creativity is. I can remember when I grew up that we had a classical music class. We had to listen to classical music, which literally turned me on at the age of 10 to classical music. I remember doing an art class. I remember when we did history, we did projects. We just didn't read history books. We had to actually act out history. So in those days, I don't know about you, Pamela, but what your schooling is, but it really bothers me a lot what's happening in the schools today. And one of the things that's made me want to write a book about how to use your heart more is I don't think people recognize they don't use it, and they have a wonderful instrument that they can use.
Well, I have to tell you, just in terms of the way schools are approaching education these days, I'm still reeling from, for me, the newly discovered reality that cursive writing is not taught in schools, which, from my perspective, is a way of connecting with your heart when you're doing writing, when you're doing journaling, and they're not teaching it anymore, and I'm sort of stunned and shocked and horrified.
Wow, I didn't know they weren't teaching writing anymore. I grew up having essays and reports and all kinds of things that were interesting to write.
Well, I'm not even talking about creating concepts. I'm talking about literally cursive writing is, at least in many schools that I'm hearing about, is no longer taught. The kids are taught to print, or they're using their thumbs on their phones, or they're, you know, using computers. And cursive writing is just not taught. I think it's one of the things that takes us away from being connected to who we are as individuals and to our emotions. But that's just me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. No one writes letters anymore.
No. It's
they write, they do it on the email. You write letters on email, but you don't write them by hand and send them in an envelope. That's true.
We could wax unhappy about that for a while. Let me go back to living from the heart. When you say living from the heart is a way of life, what exactly does that mean?
Well, it means that For example, when you do anything in life, when you, for example, if you are going to do a project, you sit down and you think about the project and you write down what you're going to do and so on, and then you start to do the project. So instead of just doing that, after you've used your mind to think about how you're going to do this project, you take that and put it in your heart. And you'll find that if you start putting everything you do in your heart, that you're going to get a response from your heart that's going to either change that project or deepen it or expand it. And what happens when you keep doing that in everything you do, when you use your heart, when you talk to somebody, you start to listen to them with your heart. And you'll discover that your intuition comes in and you're listening to something and starting to pick up that there's more to what the person is saying. So everything, if you look at everything in your life and start to consciously start to use your heart. An example is a friend of mine just told me the other day that, and she works in a lab and she also works, has a lot of meetings, is that before she goes into a meeting, she really remembers to link with her heart, and she finds when she does a meeting like that, that she has much clearer ideas coming forth, that she has an understanding of what other people are saying that's very different than if you just went into the meeting without doing that.
What exactly does that look like? I mean, you're right. I think the majority of folks really value living in their head and making decisions from their head. So putting something into your heart, how do you shift your thinking to go there?
Well, what happens if you put it into your heart, you focus, by the way, the heart that I'm talking about is not your physical heart. It's a place right in the center of your chest. It's where you have feelings. You feel love, where you feel anger, where you feel things. And it's right in the center of your chest. So if you kind of focus and put that information into that center, what's going to happen is you can have a thought coming in and that's different. You can have a feeling coming up that when you start to feel it, it expresses something different to you about what you put in. So it's a question of just training your heart that you're going to be using it that way. And the main thing about using your heart is when you connect with the heart, you connect with your higher self. And the higher self is a part of you, and a lot of people don't really recognize the higher self as being a part of them. You have an ego self, you know, an ego self which you use in your everyday life, to actively use in your everyday life to do everything. You have a lower self, which is when you get angry or irritated, and it's your shadow side. But you also have a higher self. And the higher self is the part in you that has all your positive stuff. It's the part that loves other and that can receive love, has compassion, the part that wants to help others. But what people don't understand is the higher self is also very practical. It's something that you can use in your everyday life. It will help you solve problems. It will help you look at yourself psychologically and understand yourself better. So every time you link with your heart, you are linking with your higher self. So that's why you can suddenly get an understanding about a problem that you didn't have before, because it's coming from this higher part within you that you don't use that much.
Now, many people hear the words higher self and will automatically say, oh, I don't believe in that stuff. But you're saying this is something within you.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's the part in you that, for example, that loves others, that feels compassion. It's the part in you that experiences all the positive things around you, that loves beauty, that experiences beauty. It's the part of you that wants to go out and help others.
So for the person who is brilliant at living in their heads, the way to come out of their heads and sort of move into their hearts, into their feeling, emotional, compassionate selves, is it simply a matter of readjusting your focus, or what is it?
It's readjusting your focus. It's starting just to take the minute to connect to your heart and just connect to that energy, that higher self energy, and realize that it will take anything that you're working on and enhance it.
So in fact, it's a good thing. There are still folks who would say, well, you know, I don't have time for that, and that's not important. But you're saying that not only is it important and not only is it a good thing, but it's also an expansive way of thinking about yourself and your world around you.
Exactly, and it's also an expansive way of resolving a problem. Example is, years ago, a friend of mine and I became partners in an organization called Evolving Solutions, and we were doing team building. So we designed a program called Heartstorming. Now, we went into corporations, which were mainly men, and we started off this team building thing. They had a special, say, for example, they had a project that they were all working on. We would do brainstorming. We would throw out ideas. We'd put the ideas up on a blackboard, and they would go through the ideas and pick the ones they think had a possible thing that they could continue to work on. And then we said, okay, now we're going to do some heartstorming, which was kind of a surprise to these people. And I said, we want you to take each idea one at a time and just put it in your heart. And just leave it in your heart and close your eyes and just see what happens. And it was amazing what happened. I mean, these people that had never worked with their heart before would suddenly, well, I just got a flash about this, that we should go this way with this idea. And someone would say, yes. And I actually got almost the same thing, but in a different perspective. And they would end up taking these ideas with each one and expanding them and really, really coming out with an end conclusion that would have been very, very different from if they had just gone with the brainstorming.
So again, I hear it positive for the self. I hear more wisdom, more creativity, and quite frankly, more productivity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That doesn't take that much more time in terms of just taking that minute and reflecting. It's like reflecting on it by putting it in your heart.
When you say that constant use of the heart brings about spiritual growth, you say it as though that is an important outcome. Is it, and if so, why?
Well, I think everybody has a spirit within them. This is my belief. And I think that a lot of times when we get into the world, into the mundane world, and do mundane things and work and have all the things that happen to us on a day-to-day basis, we forget that part in us that is spiritual. And fortunately, I live in nature. I live on a lake, and I live surrounded by woods and mountains. So it's just so wonderful to go for a walk in nature and experience the beauty of nature. And when you experience that, you also kind of open up your own spirit to realize that there's more to life than just all the things that we're doing daily. So I think that when you start to work with the higher self, that part connects you to that part. You start to feel the spiritual within you more.
You know, I think about as you're describing your surroundings, which sound incredibly lovely. I'll be right over. I also think about the folks who are living in very crowded cities who just and haven't ever left the city and don't have a sense of the power and the peacefulness of just being in nature.
Yes, that's true. I mean, fortunately, there are parks in some of the major cities. I lived in New York for many years. But I also, you know, got a car at a certain point in my life and got out of New York just to be able to go to the nature, go up to where I actually live now. That's why I discovered the place I live now, because I used to get in my car and go up here to see friends that lived up here. But even being stuck in the city without a car, there are some beautiful places. When I was in New York, I used to walk on the drive, on the East Drive, and look at the river. And also on the West Side Drive, and look at the river, and look at the parks that are along the river there. And Central Park was really beautiful. I used to, on Sundays, go for a walk in Central Park. So you do have nature in the cities. I think most cities have some kinds of nature, and you can just sit there and enjoy it.
I think about how folks often think about cities, and you're right, that the tendency is to think about cities as sort of concrete jungles with nothing in them but buildings and people. But in fact, if you think about it, and if you look even in that crowded city, there is a place that you can go where there is nature and where there is peacefulness. And it's interesting, I would suggest, just to sit for a moment in those places and just take in a deep breath. It can really change your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Also, to have flowers in your house. I used to always have flowers in my apartment in New York, and plants and things like that, which were beautiful. And I took time to not just put them on the table in a vase and, you know, and look at them once in a while, but I would try once in a while just sit there and look at them, really connect with them. And again, put them in my heart. Feel the beauty in my heart.
So there are lots of ways to connect with nature that don't require you getting on a plane or a train and going away from where you live and work.
You have to want to do that. I think, again, people get so busy and they are so mind-oriented in everything they do that they forget to do those kind of things.
You know, I'm thinking about some of the very high-stress workplaces in which many people live, and it occurs to me that it would be just lovely if there was a room in which they could relax and connect with, whether it was plants or flowers or whatever, peaceful music. Wouldn't that be lovely in these high-stress workplaces? It would be lovely, period, but certainly in the high-stress workplace.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, by the way, I always also noticed that when I go to New York now, there are certain blocks that they have a little park with a fountain in it. And I see people having their lunch out that little tiny park. I forget what it was, one in 55th Street or someplace that, but there's places down the village also, a lot of places like that.
Yeah. So you can find a space to sit and connect and breathe in a different and intentional way, no matter where you live.
Exactly.
And what I'm hearing from you is that it's important.
It's to really experience it. Once you start to experience it in your heart, you're going to want to do it all the time.
What we're talking about is something that we often hear spoken about from younger folks who are perhaps more willing to see the world in the way in which you describe. But I'm thinking that you in fact have lived more than 20 or 30 years on the planet. So maybe it's never too late.
Oh, I don't think it's ever too late. I don't think it's ever too late.
The idea of waking up, we're going to go to a break in a second, but you ask the question, and I think it's really quite a profound question. You ask the reader of How to Live from Your Heart to imagine themselves in a deeply loving and completely fulfilling relationship. We're going to take a break, but on the other side, I'd like to pick up with that concept and see where that takes us.
Okay, very good.
Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We will return in just a minute. are many people who can, in fact, live and imagine and be and experience a deeply loving and fulfilling relationship. But there are just as many people who really don't have a template for that experience. What is the value of that exercise, and how do people who don't have a template for it get there?
Well, I think that to have a loving relationship, again, you have to always remember to be in your heart. One of the problems as a therapist, I've worked with some couples, and one of the problems I see when people have problems in their relationships is they don't communicate. They don't really communicate with their hearts or really express what they're feeling. And sometimes they don't even know what they're feeling. But it's about looking at the differences and accepting the differences and not getting upset when something goes wrong. What happens if somebody, say, insults somebody or gets upset with somebody and yells at somebody, then the other person gets defensive. And as soon as you get defensive, the fight starts. And it really can become very violent, not violent, but very vicious in terms of words. And those words people don't forget. So it's a question of, as soon as you feel annoyed or upset with somebody, first of all, try not to talk to them in a negative voice, but just try to sit down with them and say, "This, when you do this, it really makes me feel a certain way, or it bothers me." One of the things I tell couples, which really works very well, is that once a week, they should sit down and have a talk, really talk about what happened the week before, and start off with complimenting each other, saying, "When you did this, it was wonderful. I love it when you act like this." And just compliment each other. And then after you compliment somebody, you just say, "Well, when you don't put the cap on the toothpaste, it really bothers me. Can you try to correct that?" Or talk about something that's more serious that bothers you. And really try to talk it out. And you realize that this thing that the other person does is something that they're not going to change, that it's up to you to then say, "Okay, I love this person. I really want to be with this person. How can I let that go? How can I accept that this is the way the person is going to be, and he or she is not going to change?" And again, by putting that in your heart and asking for help on that, what is it that I need to do to let go of my negative feelings about this and just accept the person for who he or she is? But, you know, it's like, Pamela, every relationship takes work.
Indeed.
It takes hard work. It's not going to be done. You're not going to get to that place where you love each other all the time. You're going to have moments when you don't love each other and you need to get away from each other, which is fine. But it's about really using your heart more in the relationship.
And I think it's important that you've acknowledged that, you know, every couple is not madly in love every minute of their relationship, and that's okay. It's not the end of their relationship, depending on how the couple responds to it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, that's why I say it's really important sometimes to say, "Hey, I need to go away for 2 or 3 days just by myself," and not have the other person get upset. "Why do you want to leave me?" You know, I find the relationships that I've had that I just really want to be with somebody that also likes to spend a day by themselves or a few hours by themselves, because it's about reorganizing yourself and just refocusing on what you personally need to do instead of having to always be consciously looking at the other person, because that can end up being very codependent.
And exhausting.
Exhausting is right.
So, in fact, just to go back to my earlier question of what do people do who do not have a template for this deeply loving and committed relationship, it sounds like what you're saying is that a template really isn't needed. What you really need to focus on is your heart and experience that.
And communication. I think even though somebody's been with somebody for years, they don't really can tell the person how they're really feeling. And it's about, like, when you have to use your heart, you start to understand how you are really feeling also. And if you take that feeling and deepen it, then you can really sit down with your partner and say, you know, when you do this, it makes me feel this way. And I want to just tell you what I'm feeling. And can we talk about it?
And it sounds like this needs to be a no-judgment zone.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And no one's perfect. You don't want anybody to be perfect anyway. And then you have a perfectionist who's going to be very difficult to live with.
Talk about exhausting. That's exhausting.
Yes.
You give a lot of credence to the existing power that people already have within them. You say your heart already knows right from wrong, love from lust, honesty from falsehoods. Those are pretty big pieces of information to have.
Well, again, it's your higher self knows all of that. And that's why it's your higher self. It's not used 100%. It's really not used at all by most people. So if you really, it has the wisdom and understanding. So if you really have a problem or don't understand what is right or what is wrong, if you connect with your higher self through the heart, then you start to get a much clearer understanding what it is that you need to do. You're never going to be perfect, as I said, but you start to have a clearer understanding of what is right for you to do as a person. And what's right for you to do might not be right for your neighbor or even a close friend.
Continue, please.
I was going to say, that's why one of the things that I think it's important to learn by using your heart is how to mirror somebody. And what I mean by mirroring is, say a friend comes to you and asks your advice. Again, you're going to give that advice probably right away. You're going to think about it and give that advice as to what you would probably do in that situation. But if you just listen with the heart to that person and put that in your heart, you can start picking up that maybe the person isn't giving me the whole story. You can intuitively or somatic with a gut feeling say, oh, there's something more here. So instead of just giving advice, you can maybe start asking that person questions about what it is they really need for themselves. And you'll find that you don't have to give them advice. It's there in themselves. They just haven't looked at it. So it's kind of, in a way, redirecting that and to help the person themselves find it within themselves.
So instead of immediately coming out with this long list of brilliant observations that you know you have, be more curious, be more questioning, be more present with the individual in the moment.
Exactly. See, what happens is people get into their own opinions and they want to be able to express their opinions, and then they don't accept the advice, the person then feels they're not really being heard.
Well, and I think the other issue with asking for and receiving advice is that very often people aren't necessarily asking you to tell them what to do. What they're really wanting is for you to listen and to hear.
Exactly.
So it's important to find out what it is that the person is really asking of you before launching into your list of pieces of brilliance. Which might be brilliant for you and not so much for the other person.
Exactly.
You say that the heart already knows the difference between honesty and falsehoods. Are you talking about paying attention to your intuition, or what do you mean by that statement?
Yeah, I think I'm talking about intuition and discrimination. For example, if you meet somebody that you meet for the first time and you have a sudden feeling, I don't like this person. Something about this person I don't like. That's your intuition or your gut feeling. But then if you talk to the person and you listen to the person with that in mind, your discrimination or your discernment can pick up maybe why it is you don't like this person. I mean, I made a mistake when I was younger. I was dating when I meet a man I was going to go out with, and I would get that feeling in my heart, oh, I don't know if I like this person. I said, well, I'm not being fair to him. He's very nice. Actually, he's got a nice, he looks nice, he's nice. Let me give him a chance. And every time I gave a person a chance and went out with them and dated them and even had an affair with them, I realized after several months that my intuition was right, that I should have listened to my intuition, that this person was really a bummer. So it made me start doing that, because after two or three bad situations with the men that I went out with, I realized I wasn't listening to my intuition. And that's why I started really believing in it and using it more.
How does one distinguish between their intuition and their fears? You gave the example of paying attention to your intuition with the men that you were dating. I mean, certainly there are many people who have had terrible relationships and are afraid to allow themselves to feel connected. And so their first impulse will be, this guy's a bummer, this woman is a bummer. Is that their fear? Is that their intuition? Is there a difference?
Well, I think a first impression like that, when it's quick, is your intuition. I think that the fear can take place more if you start to see the person a little more, and then you start to be afraid, well, maybe this person isn't going to love me or not give me what I need. So then your desires come in. See, fear comes from a lot of desires that are not fulfilled, or you're afraid they're not going to be fulfilled. So I think there is a big difference. I think that the intuition is a flash. For example, if you're walking down the street and you suddenly have a flash, I don't think I should walk down the street. Then you listen to that and leave right away. Now, that could be a fear that something's going to happen to you if you continue walking down that street. But it could also be your intuition saying something is out there that you should be careful about. So there's where sometimes the fear could come in with the intuition.
So is it reasonable to suggest if every street you walk down, you have the sense, or most streets that you walk down, you have the sense that, I don't feel comfortable with this street, that may be more related to your fear than your intuition, which might be something that you just experience in the moment, that moment, and not as a routine?
Yeah, it's a routine that you're afraid walking down any street, particularly any street at night, then that's your fear. That's your fear.
Okay. And it's not that you don't necessarily want to pay attention to your fear, but it is important to pay attention to whether it's your intuition, whether it's your fear, what the fear is about, and really to value your intuition. So many women in particular, I find, don't pay attention to their intuition.
Exactly. Because, again, we are more in, we're talking about the feminine versus the masculine. And a lot of women who have become professional these days have to use their masculine a lot in the workplace. So it's a question of the intuition is coming from the feminine principle. Not with just the women, it's with both men and women. So when you're actually in the work mode, a lot of times you actually are working more with your masculine than your feminine. And it's really about balancing the two. My last book was How to Balance Your Feminine and Masculine. That's why I'm saying that. It's called The Rose in the Story, How to Balance Your Feminine and Masculine Energies. So if you start looking at it in terms of that, that's one of the reasons why women are more in the workplace and they're really working more with their masculine, so they haven't really been listening too much to some of their feminine, which is the intuition.
So it sounds like you're also saying, without saying it, that both men and women have masculine and feminine sides of them, and that's neither good or bad. It's just important to recognize that.
Well, it's recognized as it is good because it's a question that when you recognize it, to use both, to really use both. And, you know, if men have a feminine side to them, they're afraid to use it because then it means that they're too feminine. It's not true at all. They're just using more of their gut feeling. They call it gut feeling. They're using more of those instincts that are part of the feminine. And the feminine, by the way, also gives you the inspiration and creativity. The masculine manifests the creativity into something, whereas the feminine inspires the creativity in both men and women.
Okay, interesting.
So it's about balancing the two, having using both of them.
It sounds like it's about accepting the fullness of who you are without putting labels on it necessarily.
Exactly. In fact, when I was doing a lot of the feminine masculine workshop work, we didn't like calling it feminine masculine because everybody thought it was women and men, or gender oriented. We called it yin and yang energies.
You say that when you use the heart for understanding, the heart, it's different from the process of using your mind, which we've talked about. But you also say that wisdom comes from the heart, not through the mind. Wisdom is different from what?
Well, wisdom is coming from your higher self. That's why it's connecting with the higher self, because it has wisdom. And the mind is more analytical. Wisdom is, you know, if the wisdom is connected to this, what you call the source or God. I mean, I don't like to call it God, because God is a different name in every religion. I like to call it the source. So,
okay.
It's a different kind of wisdom. It's a wisdom of inner knowing, an inner knowing of what life is really about, what it means, what existence means. It's a wisdom of more philosophical wisdom, whereas the mind is your analytical mind, which is wonderful. You need the analytical mind that helps you look at things and analyze it, understand it, comprehend and use it in your daily life. Whereas wisdom goes a little higher in terms of the philosophy of what is life.
You know, there are many folks who, when they hear the word wisdom, they attach that concept to older and aging, and not so much to the younger individuals in our society. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up with that. Is wisdom relegated only to the older, or is this something that we all have the capacity to access and share? We will be right back, folks. This is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. And as I said earlier on, the subtitle of your book is Deepen Relationships, Develop Creativity, and Discover Inner Wisdom. Is wisdom something that is relegated to the older and the aging?
I certainly don't think so. For one thing, I believe in reincarnation, and I think everybody is born with the wisdom within them of having lived many lives, and that wisdom comes from experiencing those lives and learning from them. The whole evolution is learning from your mistakes and growing spiritually. So that's my personal belief. So I think wisdom is innate in everyone. It's a question when you're young. I think when you're really, when you're young and you're going to school and you're getting a vocation and you're getting married and you're going through your life, that you don't have time to connect to the wisdom unless you go into a monastery or an ashram. You don't have time to connect to that. In your daily life, you're so learning, and you're still learning, you're still growing, you're still moving forward in terms of your career, all of that. That's the first thing in your life that you think about, wanting to make money, to have a family, all of that. But and only when you get a little older, when the kids are grown up and you're settling your job, do you then kind of think of all that you've learned in your life, which brings you a kind of wisdom, too, of having gone through all that experience. But I think that you still have it when you're young. It's a question of not really looking for it, not looking inside yourself to access it.
And I would wonder if it's also, for those who see themselves as older, looking at those they see as younger and not believing that wisdom is possible. You know, I'm 35, this person is 18. I'm 65, this person is 35. How could these people so much younger than I have wisdom?
Well, actually, that's probably true, but I've heard some kids, young kids, 5 and 6 years old, say things that are full of wisdom, amazingly full of wisdom. I can't think of any at one saying at this time, but I've heard them and I've even read them. You know, when a little kid hears something and says something that is very profound.
You know, and I think we all have, and my guess is that the tendency is to then single that child out as being an anomaly. And in fact, what you're saying is, in essence, is that we are born with wisdom, and where we can kind of get in our own way is in not being able or willing to access the wisdom within.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that okay? I wanted to make sure I understood what you're saying.
Yeah, we're too bogged with everything that's happening to us in life to even think about accessing the wisdom. But if you did access the wisdom when you're young, it would help you in those everything that's happening in your life. It would give you a different perspective.
And you know, sometimes children will say the most profound things with the least amount of words, and it's really interesting. And I thought about that as you indicated, that sometimes people will get a significant answer, they'll get a significant piece of wisdom, but it seems so simple, so they tend to ignore it.
Yes, exactly.
That's not a good thing.
I think we're just a very busy society. I think it's wonderful that people are starting to meditate, and that's a whole new thing to our Western culture. But it's not so new now. But it's because a lot of people are meditating. I heard about this one colonel or something that taught meditation to all his soldiers, and had them meditate every day before they went out to the war.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a wonderful thing to start to meditate, because when you meditate, then you get in touch with that inner wisdom. You start to experience the calm, the peace that exists within you and outside you that you can connect to. And that's where you can find the wisdom.
So what I'm hearing over and over in what you're saying is that there is so much of us that is there. There's so much to us. There's so much of us. And in a world where many people are frequently confronted with, you're not enough, or what have you done for me lately, it's so important and perhaps so difficult to take a step back and say, wait a minute, I am full and wise within myself. I don't know everything, but I am full and wise within myself. What an empowering treat if we could all do that.
Well, yes, and I think what you're saying, too, is about loving yourself. About loving yourself. And it's, if you love yourself, then you can get let go of a lot of the emotions and self-criticism and all those things that will keep you in a negative place. It's about really loving yourself, and it's okay to love yourself. People think it's egotistical to love yourself, but it's really important to love yourself, because if you can love yourself, then you can really love others.
Well, and what's so interesting is that, you know, you will often find that with a friend or someone you care about, you will be significantly less harsh and close-minded than you are with yourself with the same circumstances and the same behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So again, it speaks to the value of loving yourself for some folks as they love others.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting exercise that you ask people to engage in that I thought, you know, could certainly be a little dicey. You ask the readers of How to Live from Your Heart with, you ask them to pick someone they really love, picture the person in their mind, and ask themselves what their true feelings are. I can see that going in a lot of different directions.
Well, if you put it in your heart, your heart's going to respond. I said, put that picture in your heart, basically. So your heart's going to respond, and you're going to respond with the love. You're going to feel that love. Now, you might think you love somebody, and if you put that person in your heart, you're not going to get very much of a response. And you might say, well, maybe I don't love this. I think I love this person, but maybe I really don't love this person as much as I think I do. Yeah, I mean, but the heart's going to respond. It's going to, you're going to feel. It's like, for example, when you start to do the exercise of connecting with your heart, what you're going to experience is a warmth in your heart, or a movement in your heart, or expansion in your heart. So the same thing is going to happen if you put an image of someone that you think you love in your heart. You're going to feel your heart expand with the warmth, or just expand, or even get a symbol of that.
So again, yeah, what I'm hearing is pay attention to yourself. Pay attention to within.
Yeah. I do have a lot of exercises in the book, and I also have stories in the book, because I've read a lot of how-to books, and I think they're very helpful, but some of them are very boring to read. So to all the things that I talk about, I have a story with. I have stories that show and explain and illustrate what it is that I'm talking about.
And stories do make it an easier read, and quite frankly, make it a more interesting read. You're right.
Yeah.
You talk about...
Well, I'm also a fiction writer, so I like writing fiction. So I'm putting that into all my books, even my Higher Self Yoga books, which I've written quite a few of, have stories in them. So
Higher Self Yoga books, just take a second to tell us what those are about.
Well, the Higher Self, I have an organization called Higher Self Inc., and which is online, and I think I have three books I've written on the higher self, and they're very psychological, because one of the things I've discovered in yoga, I've been studying yoga for my whole life practically, is that a lot of times it's just reading and philosophy, but to grow spiritually in a yoga, any kind of a yoga practice, you have to look at yourself psychologically, that there's a lot of negative characteristics that you need to really recognize and understand and consciously try to change. And the higher self is very good at helping that happen. But there's also a lot of positive characteristics that you have that you don't use, that you need to use. So my books are really very psychological in terms of having exercises that people have to do to really get to a better awareness of who they are. And in that awareness is to change the things you want to change and to enhance the things you want to keep and enhance. So it's a it's a yoga teaching, and yoga is means literally union with God. That's the translation of it. So it's about really striving spiritually to change yourself so that you can become more spiritual and to use that spirit within you.
You talk about different kinds of energy, love energy, wisdom energy, creative energy, and motivational energy. What is wisdom energy?
Well, it's to me, wisdom energy is the what I was saying before, getting in touch with the higher self, getting in touch with a place within yourself that is like an empty spot. It's very peaceful. It's taking a question and putting it in your heart, but also meditating with that and reaching a place within yourself that you can just feel the peace of the calmness within yourself. And when you're in that calm place, this is really what you strive for when you meditate also, to be in this calm place without any thinking. It's when the wisdom can come in, where your question about something can suddenly be there and answered. To me, it's very, very peaceful, very calm, with no thinking about, just being in a calm state.
And motivational energy, what is that?
Well, motivational energy is, say you want to do a project of some kind, and you're procrastinating it. You don't want to do this project. It's something that you don't want to do. You need to get in touch with the energy, which I would call motivational, which will make you use your will. Your will is very important. I'm going to do this task and get it done once and for all. I'm not going to procrastinate anymore. So again, it's linking with your heart and saying, give me the energy to really sit down and do this. And let me just do it. It's a strong energy. It's a will energy. It's saying, I want to get this finished so I don't have to look at it anymore. So that's what the motivational energy is about, basically.
Now, later on in your book, you talk about the importance and the value of not attaching yourself to outcomes. And you talk about that in the context of relationships. I would think in the example that you just gave, an attachment to an outcome would be useful if it's a project, if it's a thing to accomplish, but not so
yes.
much necessarily with people and friends and loved ones.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to be, I don't like the word attached to it, but you want to be motivated to finish it and make it happen. Or if you have a major project that you want to, like a book to write, you have to have the motivation to sit down and write the book and to plan it and how you're going to do it and all that. And that takes effort. It takes will. Yeah, I love the use of the will because I study psychosynthesis, which was read by Roberto Saggioli, and he has a wonderful list of what the will is. And the skillful will is using that will to accomplish something. Then you have the forceful will that can be overbearing, and then you have the whole different kinds of will, but the skillful will is what I'm talking about in terms of taking a project and completing it and making it happen. And it takes will.
You talk about, and I'm sort of following up on the concept of will, which is something that is important to use in your personal life, but it's also important to use in the workplace. And you give some examples of how using your heart in the workplace is valuable. You say, for example, that when you're dealing with someone who is very intellectual, to connect with your heart. And I would think that if you're dealing with someone very intellectual, the natural human tendency is to try to meet them where they are and connect with your intellect as well.
Yes, I would think that usually happens. But if you switch it, and connect with your heart, again, when they're talking to you in an intellectual way, you can know how to talk back to them so they hear you. It's a question of learning words to use with people that are all mind-oriented. You use mind-oriented words for them to really hear you. If someone's more heart-oriented, you use heart-oriented words, like I feel about something or I think about something is an example of those two things. But if someone's very intellectual, it's important for you to use your heart, because when you're trying to compete with them intellectually, then things become really kind of not really working out, I don't think it works out very well. Either you feel incompetent because they're more intellectual than you, or you want to be competitive and want to be as intellectual as them, or maybe use your intellect to kind of outsmart them. So I think it can be very competitive. So if you use your heart, I think you're less competitive.
Well, and it also sounds like you're open to all of what that individual is putting in front of you, which is extremely useful in terms of responding and certainly in trying to get projects done.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's very important to use your heart when you go into meetings. That said, the meetings and one-to-one or anything to do with this work-related. You use both. I mean, I certainly believe in the mind. You have to use both. But again, it's a question of using the both, not just using the mind.
Which again, is what I think so many people, certainly in today's world, are very much trained to do, to immediately go to the mind and use the intellect with a belief that that's really the safer and more powerful place, and perhaps not so much and certainly not always.
Yeah. I remember reading in Forbes magazine many, many years ago an article about the difference between women and men executives. And they said with men, when they were given a project to do, the men would just take that project and do it. It'd be all mind-oriented. They would just do the project, and they wouldn't think of any other ways of doing it. They would come up with an idea, and they would finish it, and they would go ahead and do it. With women, they say women would come up with 10 different ways to do it. They would look at every aspect of what they need to do, and that was more heart or feminine, more heart-oriented. But they said the problem with women is they would get stuck with all the different things, and they didn't make up their minds as to when, what, to, which one to do. So it was a good example of the heart and mind, whereas the men weren't using their creativity to explore that there might be another way of doing something that would be better, and the women were doing too much of the feminine and not making a decision and then getting into their masculine and doing it.
Nanette, there's so much more that we could talk about, but not today. Today, I want to thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Nanette, is there a website where people can go to get more information about your work?
Yes, it's Nanette V. V as in, actually, my middle name is Veda, V-E-D-A, or the Vedas, V-E-D-A, NanetteVHucknall.com. And it's HUCKNALL.
So it's NANETTEV HUCKNALL.com. All one word. That will get you to Nanette's website and more of what she's doing.
Yes.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Nanette, for joining us today. And thank you for writing this book.
Oh, thank you, Pamela. Thank you so much for having me.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, you can send an email to Pamela, PAMELA@mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.ORG. And remember, Mind Talk is available to you on demand at mindtalk.org, or you can download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes Store. Folks, I want to, as I close out, remind you that if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. Take care.